The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
Yo, what's going on, people? Welcome to Throwdown, episode 377. I'm your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight I'm joined by Emilio Lopez.
What's up, people? How's it going?
Carlos Romero.
Yo.
There he is. Brett Murdoch.
Bolden by the flame of ambition.
And Brian Manjoma.
What up?
All right, back with another one you already know. All right, no Chris action. Old man problems, you know, bodies start breaking down when we get to advanced age, you know, so He needed a night off. And Adam, we don't know what's going on. We don't even know what's going on.
He's in the middle of an Adam story. We'll hear about it later.
Yeah, he probably is. Yeah, living one, you mean?
To happen at some point. He can't just always tell us about them.
This is true. They got, you know, he has to cultivate them. So, yeah, so maybe Adam will show up. Maybe he won't. I don't know. Maybe there's a WrestleMania show. Who knows what's going on with this man?
I think WrestleMania is this weekend. I can't remember.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't keep up with that stuff. But yeah, Throwdown is here, back live through the power of the internet, you know?
And graceful.
And yeah. By the way, yo, this week in gaming, nothing happened. We got some stuff here, but it's we started January strong, man. Crazy stuff. Microsoft buying Activision, you know, all this other shit. And then it's like, and then what was it, Sony buying Bungie? Like, everybody's buying everybody. We had plenty of fodder. And I was like,
they didn't buy Bungie.
You know, actually, they did. They acquired them. So what do you mean they didn't? You were there. Bungie. They did.
They did buy them.
Yeah, they did. They acquired them, you know.
That didn't happen. Fake news.
All right.
That's some Mandela effect shit.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, Nelson Mandela, he's not real.
No, the Mandela, you know how what the Mandela effect is, right?
What, that he wasn't in prison or something like that, right?
Yeah, that he died in prison.
Yeah. No, he never did.
He went to prison and he got out.
Yeah, and that's when he, like, really hardcore, you know, became active. I mean, he was an activist before. That's why he landed in prison. But, yeah. I don't know how that started. I'm like, who the fuck thinks he died in prison? That's stupid.
It's weird. It's because it's like some people – I think it's like people's memories of things sort of getting jumbled together. It's kind of like the how people think the Berenstein Bears are called the Berenstein Bears.
Yeah.
It's a weird sort of thing that maybe at some point somebody said it wrong and it sort of caught – around and now everybody thinks like, wait a minute, I thought it was this.
Well, that's for that one. I think it's just a common there's tomato tomato kind of thing with Stein. Like there's you know, like Epstein or Epstein. Like people always mispronounce that name.
Because Mandela effect, they're both legitimate ways of saying that, though.
Well, it's actually spelled like Stain, Stain, not Stein.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always interchanged them, to be honest. But anyway, no, but that is actually not fake news. Sony now owns the Bungie. But they said they're going to leave him alone, so we'll see about that.
What are they going to leave him alone to do? I mean, leave him alone to essentially just make those make multiplayer games? Because to be honest, like, I don't think any of the guys that made Halo are even still there anymore.
Who knows? Yeah, but no, remember what we discussed, that's one of the – Sony said that's one of the reasons – or your boy Jim Ryan said that's one of the reasons they acquired him, because they want Bungie to help them make more live service games.
I mean, you know, I'm noticing a theme with live services and Sony, you know, because of a certain other acquisition that had just recently happened.
Yeah.
With them too.
It's interesting.
But we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that on Sunday.
Sunday.
I know that much.
Oh shit! Well, Brian has some inside info, man. Inside.
Yeah, those are called a tease.
That's a tease.
I know a person who has submitted a question for the question show that may have something to do with that.
Interesting.
Is it a drunken person?
You know,
may he, possibly be.
Is he demonic?
Demonic.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, so let's get into the little news that did happen this week. First up, womp, womp, womp. The Suicide Squad game has been delayed to 2023. Is anyone surprised by this?
No, that's just the order of business. We're just waiting to hear about the next delay. Again, all power to them. You know, whatever they'll do, hopefully it'll fix whatever's wrong with it. You know, either that or they're just waiting for more next gen consoles to be out in the field.
Well, yeah, who knows? You know, I think just the effect of the Rona. You know, I was reading some stories about how like developer, you know, GDC happened, and they were talking about how a lot of developers had to like lug these expensive rigs to their homes and shit to, you know, try to render games and all that. And they were like, even the way they made the new Destiny DLC, it was like some weird way and stuff because it was, you know, they couldn't do it the old way anymore. You know, yeah. So I think all this shit is just taking effect. So I'll read this. This is from who is this? Sefton Hill. He's the creative director. He goes, "We made a difficult decision to delay Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League to spring 2023. I know a delay is frustrating, but that time is going into making the best game we can. I look forward to bringing the chaos to Metropolis together." So thanks for your patience.
Did they have a date?
It was supposed to be out this year, apparently.
Oh, okay. They didn't have a specific date. No. They just said this year.
Yeah,
okay.
They said 2022. And I believe this follows in the heels of the Gotham game that got delayed recently. Right. And also the Harry Potter game was also delayed as well. Remember that, you know, that was supposed to come out last year, I believe. Yeah.
That game has been constantly getting delayed. Yeah. Though, yeah. I remember.
So it's just kind of interesting how there's all these like Warner Brothers delays.
Who knows if, I don't know what it's like to develop for Warner Brothers. Hopefully it's not that they're essentially there's too many cooks in the kitchen telling them to do certain things. Who knows?
Yeah. This is interesting. IGN, you know, I'm reading this off of IGN. The delay means that the Suicide Squad game will arrive almost 8 years after the last game Rocksteady made, which was Batman Arkham Knight. That's wild. Like, I wonder how studios got stays afloat not making games for that long.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's like, you know, a company makes it when it's not like a company makes an investment and that's what keeps them afloat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a big difference between, you know, something like an independent studio. That's part of the reason why a lot of independent studios want to get bought up, because they have that constant revenue stream.
Yeah. Logic Win says if they delay the Gotham game, the Gotham game was delayed. It already was delayed, you know? But I'll be honest, I mean, the Suicide Squad game, I'm at least interested in just because of the developer. I have next to no interest in that other game,
WB Montreal, the guys who did the Batman. Was it Batman?
Oh, Origins?
Yeah, Origins.
Okay. Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So
it's weird. It's funny because like they sort of switch places. You know, like Suicide Squad should be the side company thing.
Yeah, and it
the
should
Batman
be.
Batman
yeah.
game should be the main thing. So now it's those guys making this sort of multiplayer Batman. I mean, not Batman, Bat Family game.
Yeah, Bat Family. Yeah, no Batman in it. You know,
because he's. I don't know if they're going by the plot of the last Batman.
I don't know. I don't even think Batman. I don't even know if it's connected to those games. Remember, it's not a Rocksteady game. So,
well, the other one wasn't a Rocksteady game either.
That is also true.
Arkham City Origins.
So yeah, I guess I should say we don't know if it's in the same universe or not.
Hmm.
Who knows? But does anybody care that the Suicide Squad got the lead?
To be honest, I really don't care for the Suicide Squad game. It doesn't. It's just like I haven't seen enough to care. We're just seeing a lot of sexy, cinematics, but not any sort of real gameplay. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I care.
Go ahead, Brett. What's your take?
Well, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as Manny in the sense I don't care that much, but I do care in the sense that you show me a game that is worse for going back into development and baking a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll talk, but for the most part, this almost exclusively means a better game. So, yeah, do your thing. Don't send it out half baked like we're getting so many things. And you know, fix it, finish it, and then send it out. And this is just kind of evidence that they're doing that. So I care in the sense that like good for you. These days, and I know that we live in a weird world, but these days I almost applaud people every time I hear about a game being delayed. It's like, all right, making the hard choice to deliver a better product. Good on you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And obviously, we don't need another, Cyberpunk. you know.
When's that game coming out?
Who knows? I think it's been delayed again.
Yeah, I mean, I know parts of it are out, but like, when's the rest? When is it finished? When is this game done?
Well, we're talking about that one too, right? Not Cyberpunk, but the other one.
Which one? The Suicide, the Batman game? Or non-Batman?
Oh no, with CD Projekt Red and a certain engine.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about that. Okay. As a matter of fact, I think that's next on the docket. Unless anybody has anything else to say about the Suicide Squad.
No, yeah, well, power to them if they can. You know, I mean, I don't really care for the game right now because I haven't seen enough. But you know, again, you know, as Brett said, you know, who's ever been worse for the wear if they've delayed the game?
Right? Yeah, exactly. So. Keep delaying it.
Hopefully it'll be in a state where it can actually be played.
Yeah, also, Blitz brings up a good point though. Cyberpunk was delayed like 3 times, and look how that came out.
Cyberpunk really needed like literally the amount of time that they've been fucking with these DLC like patches and shit. That's the amount of time that that's needed to get time. The game to development yeah. time. They at least needed 2 more years to get that game done.
It's funny because they said, go ahead, Ben.
No, I was about to say, like, to be fair, Brett said that he has not seen a case where a game got delayed and it was made worse. So, again, we don't know the state of Cyberpunk before the delays. It may have been much worse.
Oh, yes, true.
It was even more. You know, we know what the state of Cyberpunk before the launch was. It's the console version.
No. I mean, like, before the delays. Like, because it was meant to come out, like, was it spring 2019 or something?
Something like that, yeah.
I would absolutely love if they had a fully finished, polished game, put it back into development, and came back out with this. I mean, I would just... That would almost be worth it. I would just laugh. Like, wow, yeah, you guys... I mean, we know that they put it back into development several times. There's actually a chance that, you know, there was a really good functioning game there, and they went, nah, let's redo some shit.
Oh, God. That'd be terrible.
I mean, we know this game went back in development, what, 3 times?
We don't know, not went back in development. It got delayed 3 times.
No. I heard. I'm pretty sure they scrapped the game and restarted 3 times.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know. I don't want to substantiate that. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because we have heard of that happening to some games before, you know, where they. I think that's what happened with Halo, you know, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. That actually happens in games more than you think.
No, it does. Yeah, it does.
Cyberpunk, this game's halfway done, but fuck this. We're doing something different. Dying Light is another culprit on that one.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying we don't know that for this game specifically. But that shit does happen. It absolutely does.
It happens a lot. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know,
I can't substantiate it, but I swear I remember reading about it. If anybody in the audience knows, pipe up, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, Brad. That's all I'm saying. I would not be surprised at all, you know? Anyways, move on. Manny already mentioned it. New Witcher is in development from CD Projekt Red. But the kicker is that they're not going to be using the Red engine. They're going to be using Unreal Engine 5. I think they may have learned that Red engine ain't all that.
I think it's a lot like the idea of using the Luminous engine for anything. The overhead for developing for it is too high. And, you know, even like Square, like a good example of this is actually what Square did. Literally all their games, Final Fantasy VII and Kingdom Hearts, all those games were slated to run on the Luminous engine. But they said, nah, we're not going to use that. We're just going to use Unreal. And then both those games came out.
Yeah. And they were not buggy. Fucked up.
They weren't buggy. They worked well. And to be honest, like when they actually started those games, it actually was not that long. Like, their development time wasn't crazy long when they finally got started on them. Yeah. I mean, they literally had a whole version of Final Fantasy VII that they...
Yeah, Brett, see, back to your earlier point, they restarted that fucking game a bunch of times, you know?
They dumped the version because they had some other company handling Final Fantasy VII. Then they moved to whatever, Unreal, and then, you know, for both Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy VII, and then those games came out.
Yeah, they came out.
I suspect, and this is just a theory, I think... CD Projekt Red went with Unreal not only because it's easier to develop for, but it can also it gets results faster than most things. I feel like I think that their development time for this new game is probably going to be way shorter than their previous iterations of The Witcher. I think they're trying to truncate that time to try to essentially salvage whatever reputation they have.
Yeah, and that's the point. Yeah, that's the thing I wanted to bring up because obviously. You know, if Cyberpunk came out the way it was supposed to, you know, this game would be getting high praise. Like, you, the announcement was made, everybody was like, all right, whatever. You know, think about it like this, right? Just off of the strength of The Witcher 3, how popular that game was, like, Cyberpunk was just given, like, carte blanche. No one questioned it. It was like, there's a CD Projekt Red. They made one amazing game. Now we're going to trust them completely, you know?
I mean, yeah, but they kind of just... That doesn't transfer more than to their next game, and I think that...
No. But maybe I didn't speak it right. But basically, I'm just saying that trust is gone. You know, that shit is over.
They've both, and you've... I don't know that I've ever seen this. They've made one of... And I'm sure Brian will have an example of something I'm forgetting, but they made one of the best games in video game history, like, critically acclaimed-wise, and they made one of the worst games in video game history, critically acclaimed-wise. Like, it's... I don't know that anybody has ever done both.
It's interesting. Well, let's say audience praise, or what is it? Audience, there's a word for it. You know what I'm talking about. Because critics but I'm saying critics initially liked Cyberpunk before it really came out. You know what I'm saying?
But you're right about that.
Basically, audiences loved The Witcher 3 and they hated Cyberpunk. Like, and this is the same company, back to back. Yeah, you're right. Very rare to see something like that, you know?
Mass Effect.
Mass
Effect 2, Mass Effect 3.
Yeah, that's a good example, too, because that backlash was vicious, you know? That was brutal. I know I'm saying this not having played The Witcher 3, but I still think that was unearned. I'm like, okay, because, you know, Witcher 2 was well-received, right? Witcher 1 apparently is a terrible game, but they made this one, like, amazing game, and you just don't question them. It's like, shouldn't they have at least two or three games in a row before you start, you know, going down that level? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, they supported it really well, I think, is the other thing. Like, they gave really good, like, expansive DLCs. So, like, in a way... They had released several games. It was just all under the Witcher 3 banner being such a massive game.
It's a good point, yeah.
From what I understand. And, you know, they did a really good job of being good to their community. That was one of the things they were definitely known for before that. So you kind of felt safe putting your trust in them. Honestly, it's a shame. Like, I give them a tough time, but I will say this in sincerity. Maybe this just shows what a cynic I am. Like, I'm glad that Cyberpunk didn't kill the studio, because in my opinion, there was a very real chance that it could have, and that would have been a damn shame, because I think there's a lot of talent there. I think that it was just mismanaged for Cyberpunk, and I'm really glad they're getting a chance to kind of go back to their roots. And I think that, if I understand correctly, they're relaunching The Witcher. They're rebooting the whole thing. Is that incorrect?
I don't know if it's not correct. You know,
I think this isn't The Witcher 4. This is just The Witcher.
Yeah. It's not The Witcher 4. We're just calling that just for the sake of it. But no, it's not The Witcher 4. It's just The Next Witcher.
It might not even be The Next Witcher. It might just be The Witcher. I honestly think a reboot would not be bad for the series. I mean, for the hardcore fans, you know, stories are kind of serialized. They jump forward and backward in time. So telling a prequel story or something like that, I don't think the audience would mind so much, and it would give a new audience a lot of opportunity for an end.
It's kind of interesting because, like, the Witcher games actually take place after the novels. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they could pretty much go. And even says right here, a new saga begins. So it's definitely, I don't know if it's going to be a reboot, but it'll definitely be something different for sure.
It'll be called Witcher Origins.
Yeah, imagine that.
Oh, God.
I don't think that they would go that far, because I don't think this is a reboot, because, again, I haven't played Witcher 3. If you had seen the picture, because the Witchers wear the medallions, and usually the ones that we've seen so far have been the ones of the wolf, because that's what Geralt wears. But this is one of a lynx, which means that it's going to be a different school.
Interesting.
If I remember things correctly from the third Witcher game, one of the Witchers that Geralt teamed up with, he's the one that creates a different school. I don't remember if that's the school of the Lynx or not. So it may possibly be one of those cases where it's still technically in the same universe, obviously, but it's not following Geralt's storyline. Yeah, it's following like a different storyline, which is perfectly fine.
It's a Witcher, not the Witcher.
I guess it's kind of like a Mass Effect Andromeda type situation, where it's like, hey, it's still the same universe. Yeah, universe-ish, but different place, different time, different people,
different team.
Yeah, it's what they're doing with the Castlevania show, which, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with. Like, thank you for ending five seasons of an anime on, like, a note that I'm like, that there, ended, done, perfect. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it, man.
Did you watch it again, or did you just watch it for the first time?
I watched it again. It's solid. It has a great story arc that, you know, has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And then they end it, and they're like, cool, we're done here. Like, you're not going to stretch it out. You're not going to cut it short. You're not going to, you know, try and build it to something else. Like, oh, well, we may have more Castlevania stories, but this one's done.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many Belmonts in the family. You know, I think people are really want to see the Belmonts that come after him now.
I mean, I would be really interested in a generational thing. But my big thing was like, man, like, you rarely see a story end in a satisfying fashion. You know, we're just like, yeah, man, that ended right where it should have. I'm happy that ended this way. I shouldn't be happy that the show is done, but it really nailed it. They really closed it down. So good on them.
Cool.
I've been thinking about that a lot lately, too, because I swear to God, I know Tony doesn't agree with me because it's not Dracula in the castle, but fucking Elden Ring is Castlevania.
No, but I've said that Souls games are Castlevania games.
This one more than any other one. Like,
yeah, see, that's the where I disagree. I think Bloodborne, particularly the first half, is really super. Like, was it what's the name of the fucking castle with the vampires in it?
The Vileblood.
Yeah, I'm like, bro.
Yeah, no, yeah. That was good. This game just feels like that an expansion of that. Like, I've assaulted at least three castles, been fighting off like undead skeletons and shit, getting to the top. Also, I'm using dual chain whips, so I'm really leaning nice. Into it.
Yeah, you're going hardcore. But no, the games, like I've always said, these Souls games are the 3D Castlevania games we've always wanted. They're fucking fantastic.
Well, even down to the design philosophy, the Metroidvania of you're going to move forward, you're going to get some stuff, and you're going to eventually backtrack your way here and find some secret passages and, you know, maybe a shortcut or two. Like, it's like, holy shit, it's just, the natural continuation of that design philosophy.
Yeah, for sure. Right. I mean, we don't really have much to say about The Witcher because they didn't say a lot either.
No, it's just an
there is some news, though, that did come along with this. Apparently, they are not abandoning the Red Engine just yet because it will still be used for the Cyberpunk expansion.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's like, what are they going to switch the engine of Cyberpunk? Of course they're going to use Red Engine.
No, but the thing is, they're making a Cyberpunk expansion. Like, why?
Well, they said they were going to make a Cyberpunk.
I think at this point, it's like, just give up.
There's actually a full part of the city that people are you know, theorizing that is just closed off. It's like an area that that's all closed off, and if you got into it, it looks like unfinished environments. So they're like, maybe this is the area that gets filled out once with the expansion.
Yeah, and if they actually finished it and fleshed it out, they would make it amazing. They were talking about building it into an MMO. Like, man, can you imagine Night City full of other players doing gang shootouts and shit in the streets? Like, give that thing the Division treatment. I can see that.
No, clock me out then. Fuck that. There you go.
You like the Division.
Yeah, but I got tired of it too. That's the reason I stopped playing it, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, none of us like games as a service anymore. I don't think anybody actually likes games as a service. It's just kind of this weird need response that they cultivate.
Yeah. I do. Brian likes them. Okay, there you go.
Really?
I like them. Yeah. They, again, when it's done right and when it's done well, it's actually quite fun. You know, it makes things interesting. You know, gives you a reason to keep coming back and experiencing more of the game that you love. Like, who doesn't like more game?
But do you think that there could be a persistent...
That's at a point I got to get checked the fuck out of a game. I can't be on it forever like that, you know?
Well, Brett, just to interject, isn't World of Warcraft sort of like the OG games as a service?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and they're the ones that came up with that kind of weird fucking Pavlovian response of like, you know, I need purple armor. My blue armor's not good enough. It's they're the ones that popularized that, so I can kind of lay that at their feet. But I also don't think that just because a game is persistent, I don't necessarily think that means it's games as a service. I think games as a service is a business philosophy meant to exploit the player as much as possible. It's entirely okay to have your game have expansions, DLC, things like that. Like, keep that money coming in, but don't do it by gatekeeping and paywalling the things that you normally give to a player for free. Give them extra content. Don't charge them a la carte for the whole meal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all can agree with that. But I'm with Brian. There are exceptions, but I agree with Brett that, you know, sort of the rule is that, you know, leads to more exploitation and there's more use cases of games that just try to exploit the gamer and, you know, putting that carrot on the stick with microtransactions and DLCs and stuff. But there are those exceptions that, you know, with games but it's very few.
Yeah, I'm tired of all that shit, to be honest. Destiny and fucking Division dried me out of that bullshit. So no more of that, you know? Anyway,
No mas.
Yeah, Cyberpunk, we'll see what happens. I hope it's good. But it's like, I don't know. I think it's over. But
I do have a question for Brett. What do you think? You think Elden Ring and From Software can... What do you think From Software can make Elden Ring sort of a games as a service type game?
I think that they could make DLC. They've historically, when they've made DLC, it's been extremely well received. So, I think they could make DLC, but I don't think that they could ever make it necessarily a games as a service, because again, that business philosophy kind of, you know, runs opposite to what the Souls games are. You know, if they start putting armor behind paywalls,
oh, God.
Or saying, you know, like there's an event going on this week in Stormvale Castle where the Lord of Wind has come and you must gather with your friends to defeat, like, fuck that noise.
Yeah, fuck
nobody
that.
Wants to do that.
Oh, join the Lord of Wind.
Yeah, it's nobody wants to do that. So like the style of design wouldn't work, but that doesn't mean that they can't have a persistent game with consistent cash flow. Like, this could be an evergreen title. They could just release DLC after DLC and just keep unlocking new areas, patching them into the game.
I mean, like in general, their DLCs have been very good. Like, I always put that Bloodborne DLC. I mean, that's a lot of game they put in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah, they just give you everything in the game. They're like, check it out. Here's a new world, new armor, new enemies, new weapons, new everything. It's just everything we gave you before, you know, just a little bit less than a full game's worth. So, boom, there you go. And that's really what you should do. I mean, that's when we first heard about DLC, we all kind of agreed to it because we're like, okay, so like, if you don't have time or money to make a sequel right now and the title's still hot and the graphics are still relevant, you can just keep releasing content that keeps making you money and keeps your customers happy. And publishers are like, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they turned around and sold us each fucking Street Fighter character individually.
Yep, and that's the fighting game market these days. Like, I've been looking at that new Guilty Gear game, and I'm just like, I get, you know, I look at it, I'm like, oh, man, but all the characters are all spread out. Like, before you used to be able to get, you know, if you beat the game a certain way, you would unlock the character. Now it's like, oh, you got to buy season whatever. I'm like, do they just have season just to have the whole thing together? Do I need to wait for these stupid characters to come out?
Well, yeah, and a byproduct of that, man, is that, you used to be able to beat the game a certain way to unlock a certain character. Now they want to sell you that character, so you can't beat the game a certain way to get it for free anymore. And I think that's the thing that a lot of players are upset about.
Like, just to talk about it, like, they recently for Guilty Gear Strive, they put a Testament back in the game. Like, Testament was in the original Guilty Gear and Guilty Gear X. And if you beat the game a certain way in the original Guilty Gear or Guilty Gear X, you got Testament. Same thing with Baiken, the one-armed samurai woman. They were both secret characters that you could unlock by playing the game. Like, you did certain amount of moves or whatever, and then you would fight them, and then you get them as a character on the character selection. Now it's like, no, you just wait for the season pass.
Yeah, that's how fighting games are now. That's part of the reason I'm like, I don't want to mess with this stuff anymore.
There's no characters to unlock now. Like,
no,
you can't,
there aren't.
You can't,
that doesn't exist. Unlocking means buying. That's what unlocking
is. Yeah, so
is.
What the fuck is the point of me, like, other than having fun on the game? Like, what the fuck is the point of me, like, getting to the end of, like, a gauntlet of challenge enemies or fighting my way to the top of the tower or whatever the fuck you want to do in this particular game? Like, what is the incentive for beating it? And it's not even the incentive. What's the reward for beating it? If I go through all of this effort, learn all of this stuff, and fucking get good, and I get to the end of the rainbow, like, the fuck is there for me anymore? You've parceled it off, packaged it out, and sold it individually. It's not so much that I do mind you constantly trying to push it on me, but the thing I really mind is you not putting in the fucking game so you can sell it to me.
Yeah. And again, you know, and I'm speaking about Street Fighter specifically, even though all fighting games are guilty of this now, they're catering to the FTC guys, the guys who only play those games that want new content. They're perfectly happy with that shit. You know,
well, yeah, you know what they're going to do? They're going to fucking constantly alter the balance of the game, you know, quote unquote. Well, we're going to balance the game, and they're going to constantly change the meta intentionally to a new character you haven't fucking bought yet. I guarantee you, because you'll see this as a pattern. The new, like, they'll change everything and they'll nerf the fuck out of one character, and all of a sudden the new badass character just so happens to be the one that you can buy for $5.99.
Well, the way the game Grand Blue Fantasy does it is that they have the DLC characters. When you go through the story mode, you see them and you can actually fight them. But the thing is that you can't actually access them.
It's almost worse.
They're fucking teasing you, like, "Oh, hey, wait, who's this samurai character? She's not on the character selection of Dream." Oh yeah, because she's the DLC one.
Yeah. So when Seb said goes, remember when you had to pay for items that are already on the disc? So what's worse, that or this? You know, because it's evolved into, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we're just gonna give you this stuff later. You know,
I mean, you can still see the equivalent when, like, you release a game that, like, let's say I release, you know, Adventure Man 2003 or whatever. And then, like, you can actually take all the code, and people do this. They do the code dump and then rifle through it to find, like, oh yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in here that's not activated or walled off yet for future DLC. So you can still see the equivalent of it, quote, on the disc because it's in the code.
Yeah, because
so they still do that shit.
They plan to have the DLC.
Oh yeah, yeah. And that's when you kind of catch them red-handed. You're like, so what's all this other stuff that's locked behind, like, there's character models, there's dialogue and shit, like, locked behind stuff. Like, oh yeah, well, you know, we're gonna release that in future DLC. Like, oh, okay, so you just, you know, took resources away from the development of the main game so you can sell me something extra. Cool, 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 cool.
Yeah. All right, move on. By the way, I have to admit something.
Uh-oh, what'd you do, Ray?
I'm out of it, people. I guess I'm not, you know, I'm not a game journalist anymore, so it doesn't matter. I'm a fucking tech journalist. I didn't know the Halo series was out.
Yeah, it came out yesterday or today.
I thought it was, like, in the ether. I get, you know, because this fucking series has been canceled so many times in the past. I was like, all right, we'll see about that. Yeah, it's apparently started airing. People talk about episode 2 already. I'm like, what the fuck?
It was supposed to show up this week. So
okay, wow. I'm not gonna watch. I don't give a fuck. But it's like, that's interesting.
Kinda a lot caught of people me by are, surprise. Some people are unhappy about it because it's sort of the, you know, there's rumors that, you know, at least the showrunner said that they never played it.
By the way, the showrunner came out to clarify. He said the Variety took him out of context.
Okay.
He said that, you know, he obviously played the games and the whole team did, even with the 343. But Variety took him out of context. That's what he says.
So. Okay, whoa, hold on. I want to put that comment in context.
Uh-oh.
When you say some shit like that, like, obviously I played it, the whole team did, we went out to 343. So what you're telling me is at first you said, I never played these back in the day for my own enjoyment. And now you're saying, oh, no. We played like 3 hours of it to try and get a feel of it as a studio in a research field trip that we went out to 343. Motherfucker, that doesn't count.
Here's the thing. Like, I mean, I think you are fully capable of getting the realm of these things, you know, the realm of a franchise by being somebody, an outsider coming in. A good example of that is the director of Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. When he came in to take, he took on the directing of Star Trek. He did not know anything about Star Trek, but what he did was he essentially did a deep dive, watched a bunch of the show, and then picked out the things that he enjoyed and kind of distilled the certain things that the people liked while extending it. What would the Star Trek movie be? You know, if it was just a show and then our movie, what would that next step be? And that's what he did. So. I think it's possible for somebody to just be like, man, I don't know what this Halo shit is, but you know what? I'm willing to learn. Let's find out what this thing is.
Yeah, that's kind of the rule of a. That's kind of like one of the things of a writer. It's like, if you don't know about something, research the fuck out of it. So yeah, I'm with Manny on that. It's like, you don't need to have been a fan since you were 11 years old or whatever of Halo. I know you're not, but I'm saying in general, because there's a lot of people saying, "Oh no, you got to be a hardcore fan." No, you don't. You got to just do your Not only do you have to do your like deep dive and stuff, not only do you do research, you got to also pay respect to the property, because you don't fucking own it. It belongs to everybody, so you gotta honor that. And that's what the dude from Star Trek 2, not only is it considered a great Star Trek movie, considered one of the greatest sci-fi movies of all time, and the guy did his research. That's how it should be.
I think I can do you one better.
What's up?
Ryan Reynolds had never read Deadpool until he played the Deadpool.
There you go.
The terrible one where he had his mouth sewn shut.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that caused him to become such a fan that he went back, read all the stuff, became like this fucking super fan, ended up investing $12 million of his own money to get the first movie made because he wanted to be Deadpool that bad.
Yeah.
And then leaking that trailer.
Like, Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool now. Like, he is, you know, he's the source that you go to. So, like, the fact that you can go from not knowing about something to researching it to basically being the definitive source on it. It's like, I mean, not to say like he's like the expert, but everybody agrees like, yeah, no, you are Deadpool now. So, yeah. I mean, whatever you say.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the point.
It happens.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that. I guess what I am saying is I feel like that comment is misinforming. What you're saying is I went out and played it a little bit, but I wasn't a fan back in the day. Just own your statement, man. Like, I don't think that there's anything wrong if he did play it. Like, I do understand the idea of, like, you could have chosen somebody who was a super fan the same way you could have chosen, you know, somebody different to help write Elden Ring. Like, I don't know, Brandon Sanderson?
You know.
Just saying.
Man.
So, like, I understand the sentiment. I do. But you have to give him a chance. That's the thing. Like, if he does a bad job, you can point back to it and say, this is why. But Even if 90% of the time it turns out bad, this could be the 10% of the time. And that's you can't go making presumptions about how he's going to do it. You got to let him try and fail and then judge the fuck out of him. That is the fair way to do things.
That is the order.
Yeah. All right.
This is the way.
All right. What's next? Oh, by the way, this next story I had here for Adam, but I guess we'll do it too. Okay. So Ubisoft is planning a game showcase. This is interesting because remember, EA Play is not doing their thing. E3 is not doing their thing. But Ubisoft is apparently going to have their own show. Like, fuck it. We got some, you know. So let's run down.
Do they got more by the numbers open world game for us?
Yeah. By the way, and I should state, this is not official. This is based on reports. You know.
Okay.
Not rumors. It's based on, you know, like, insider shit. I'll read this. The site that got the exclusive here is called X-Fire. I've never heard of this site. According to several sources with direct knowledge of Ubisoft's plans, we can report that a big game showcase event from the French publisher has been in the works for some time. They've done their own show, so this is not out of the realm of possibility, obviously.
Yeah, okay.
To avoid game announcements being drowned out by the competition, the event was meant to go ahead before this year's rumored E3. However, recent world events seemingly put those plans on hold. We understand that a total of 20 games are lined up and ready for some form of an announcement in the near future, whether at the delayed event or otherwise, from brand new game reveals to development updates, release dates, and trailers. It's worth highlighting that you'll find the details of several previously announced Ubisoft games below. Also, much of like its peers these days, Ubisoft is no stranger to delaying games. So take these release dates with a pinch of salt. That's a fair thing to say. the first game, Skull and Bones.
That almost sounds fake now.
Yeah. So apparently that game's gonna finally, you know, be announced or update. Remember, it could just be an update. Oh shit! I forgot about this one. The Avatar game.
For the sequels, right?
Yeah. So there's that. The Division Heartland. I don't know what that is. Adam would probably know about that. I'm done with The Division, so I don't care. A sequel to Immortals Fenyx. That game actually did very well, even though I believe Ubisoft released at a terrible time, right? It was like after their own two big open world games had come out. They released Watch Dogs Legion and Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I believe, and then this game. I'm like, bro, within 3 months, you know, but everybody that played it really, really enjoyed it.
I feel like Immortal Fenyx Rising was a sort of like a slow burn. Like, I feel like initially it didn't do amazingly, but I think the good press and everything that came from that game sort of helped it over. It seems like a lot of Ubisoft games tend to get that, though.
Yeah.
It seems like a by-the-numbers Ubisoft game. That's why I still steered away from it.
Well, no, Immortal Fenyx Rising was the one that everybody kept accusing of being Breath of the Wild.
Every game gets accused of being Breath of the Wild.
No, I mean, like, literally, like, style-wise. No,
the art style was definitely behind, but it's like if you did Breath of the Wild by the Ubisoft formula, that's what you got.
Interesting.
Though I don't know that they did their usual, like, get on the top of the tower and unlock all the icons on the map thing.
They probably did. This is Ubisoft.
Get on the top of the tower and open up all the icons on the map.
I know that they did. I had a friend who played it. Okay. Yeah, no, they were telling me about it because I was like, oh, okay, so it kind of seems a little bit different. They're like, yeah, you know, like, gives you these quests and, like, you can do these kind of assaults on these little camps and there's these towers that you go up to unlock this. The parts of the map, I was like, I get it.
I know this.
Cool. This is so interesting.
Assassin's Creed. Yeah. And she's like, well, no, it's like mythology. And I was like, yeah, but it's Assassin's Creed.
Just with magic powers and all that shit.
Yeah, magic powers, and I think they have mounts in it, too.
Yeah, they have mounts.
That's why they were calling it Breath of the Wild.
Everything's Breath of the Wild now.
Yeah, but you did this really unique thing that most games have... I can't think of a game that's ever done it. What you do is you go to a boss, and you fight the boss, and when you beat that boss, you get their power, and then you take that power, and you use it, I think, to beat another boss.
Hey.
I think that's like the general gameplay loop. It's really innovative.
Yeah, I've never heard that. It sounds very mega.
Yeah,
mega and awesome.
There's this mega. Yeah, you're pretty much a mega dude.
I think that's my next game, man. Mega dude.
Mega dude. There you go. He might be a synthetic man, by the way.
Yes.
This mega dude.
Mega dude.
He's got a smasher cannon.
Yes, he does. All right. I've never heard of this one.
Okay.
Assassin's Creed Rift. Rift. Okay. What the fuck is this?
Is it Assassin's Creed in space?
Apparently, it was originally intended to be DLC for Valhalla, so it's going to be its own thing, a smaller game that's going to kind of fill the gap between the main Assassin's Creed game, which is Infinity, the one, you know, we've talked about. I guess their answer to a live service game. Okay, so Assassin's Creed Rift is apparently going to come out in 2023. And here it is, Assassin's Creed Infinity, the big service game, I think it is. No, yeah, it's going to be I don't know what the fuck. It just sounds disgusting. Like I said, I'm done with Assassin's Creed. I'm done. I'm done with this franchise.
Here's my question that I have. Is this going to be games as a service game that's single player?
No, because it's weird the way you explain it. It's like every subsequent Assassin's Creed game that comes out will be under the Infinity banner. Like, Infinity is the hub.
Oh, like Destiny and their 10-year plan.
This just sounds stupid.
Turn everything into a service.
Yeah, but here's the thing I don't understand. Like, every games as a service that I can think of is a multiplayer thing, right? Yeah. Like, that's one of the ways they hook you, but I haven't heard anything about this being a multiplayer Assassin's Creed, which you think would be one of the main points that they're broadcasting.
But it's a live service game, so that means it's multiplayer, isn't it?
Does it?
I don't know, is Demon's Souls
a live service game?
No.
Like the Souls game? Like, because you're always online, right?
Yeah, but it's not live service, though. Okay. But again, if you could name me a live service game that's not online, I'm genuinely curious to hear it.
Yeah, well, then you'd think you'd have more people talking about, because, like, Unity fucking bit it hard on that one. So we haven't actually seen a functioning multiplayer Assassin's Creed. So you think that would be, like, the big thing that they're broadcasting. Like, you can play Assassin's Creed with your friend. Like, I'll be honest, I have a lot of game fatigue, but I'll put up with some bullshit if I can play video games with my friends.
Yeah, so this is what it says. It will tie all future Assassin's Creed titles together in a live service title and is being developed by several Ubisoft studios, including Montreal and Quebec. So, yeah, it's a live service game. It will.
I feel like this is just an Assassin's Creed subscription. I don't know if this is a multiplayer game.
But again, if subscription, that kind of screams multiplayer to me, or at least online of some sort.
No.
You know?
No, like you pay $14.99 a month. And every time they come out with a new Assassin's Creed game, it's put out under this banner.
Yeah, could be that.
Kind of like what they were, sort of like what they were doing with Halo. Think about it, right?
Yeah, kinda I mean, like, kinda, I mean, it's basically Game Pass for only Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, it could be that. I don't know. Either way, I'm not interested. I'm done. All right.
I'm curious. Yeah. I'm not interested.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely done with that series. All right. Next, we have Ghost Recon Frontline. What the fuck is this? Where's Adam? I don't care. Oh, why? Huh? I read three letters that shouldn't go together. I'm already not interested.
What's the letters?
MMO? Manny, you know what it was, letters, three letters. N.
Oh.
You know where I'm going with this, right?
Oh, yeah. They're implementing the NFT bullshit in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's funny? All that NFT shit has been tanking super.
It
big.
Has been. I'm glad it has. Yeah, no one cares about it because they see it's a grift. They see it's a grift. Okay, it says that currently there's much uncertainty about the role of NFTs. No shit, you know, in the game. However, our sources state that the Ghost Recon Frontline will be Ubisoft's primary vehicle for NFT usage, and that it plans to integrate them into a much bigger scale. I'm done. I don't care. Fuck that. All right, next game here, X Defiant. What is this shit? X Defiant has been... I don't even know that's the name of the game, by the way. It could be Zafiant. Who the fuck knows? X Defiant has seen significant changes since it was first revealed in August 2021. Wow, that game must have made a big impact because I've never even heard of it until now. The game is currently in QA, and Ubisoft recently opened up applications for their new X Defiant Insider Sessions. Okay. Here we go. X Defiant is the third FPS title in development by Ubisoft that will be free to play. The game is headed by ex-Call of Duty executive producer Mark Rubin. Oh, Mark Rubin, okay. And has been developed in collaboration with several Call of Duty content creators.
Hold on. Go back and read that last line. Like, it's been developed with who? Like, senior executive?
Executive producer, Mark okay. Rubin, yeah.
Does the executive... That just sounds like we put a suit that's made video games before. Like, he's not... That doesn't sound like a really... Well, no, I don't want to say it doesn't sound like... It's not. It's not a fucking creative role. This is not something where somebody has a vision that they're carrying onto a new studio. This is somebody who's crunched the numbers before and knows how to exploit the fuck out of you. Like, that's not something that you should be proud of. Like, to have the creative team or the art team or the writer or fucking, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at his, internet. It says, Mark Rubin worked on Call of Duty games for nearly a decade. He was executive producer at Infinity Ward, the creator of games like Call of Duty Ghosts until 2015. So
the creator in terms of, like, he pitched it in the boardroom. Like, that's, I don't know.
Didn't people not like Ghost?
No, I think they liked it because I had that dog, you know? Anyway, what is this? The part that struck me was it was made in collaboration with Call of Duty content creators. So YouTubers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in other words, so they're probably looking at it for the best ways for people to sort of, you know, promote it online. You know, like, in other words, like, looking at, like, what things they focus on as players.
Yeah, so yeah, they I guess it was made collaboration. Whatever, who cares about this game?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't. Why would you? I don't understand why you would tout that you're working with streamers.
Because they're hot shit now, you know.
I mean, they're hot shit, but, you know, at the same time, it's like, does that, like, who is that language for? That sounds like it's language for SEO, because it's not for anybody who's actually into that stuff. It's like, I can't say that, like, a bunch of mysterious streamers are working with the people. Is that anything? Is that something that you put on the side of your fucking package? No.
They're developing it to be easily streamable, because that's one of the things that people want in their video games. That's what makes a video game fun and enjoyable, is its ability to be streamed and create free revenue and free advertising, right? Like, that's why, like, this whole thing just reads like it's sent to the shareholders. Like, why the fuck do we care about the suit who's in charge of the actual creative people, like, doing the work? And why do we care that you're making this, you're trying to build a game to be mematic? You're trying to build it so that people stream it, put videos of it and shit. Like, people do that when they enjoy a game, not because it's one button away. Like, yeah. Trust me, people want to share their shit. They'll share their shit. They will hold their phones up and record that shit, and the internet will fucking love it. But you can't just be like, oh, it's so easy to share this content with your friends. Like, ah, yeah, but, I mean, nobody fucking cares, except for maybe the streamers. But, yeah, the only people who care are the people who are making money off of this. Your customers don't really seem to care that much.
Yeah,
right. And the NFTs in there, too. Like, you guys, I can't believe how out of touch Ubisoft sounds with this whole fucking thing. I'm just sitting here being like, am I done with Ubisoft, like, as a company? Because I think I fucking might be.
I haven't.
If Adam was here right now, he'd be like, ugh. You know. But Brian, you're gonna say something?
Yeah. So I was doing some research on the internet because I, you know me. Like, I'm always the one who's heard of like these obscure games, and on this one, I was like, I never heard of this. Like, what the hell is this game? So doing some research, and just as you guys were talking about, it was developed with some streamers in tandem. I found one of the influencers or the YouTubers, and I recognized his name because he started off back in the Modern Warfare days, so that's like 2007 doing YouTube. So he's a channel that does lots of FPS stuff, and he's been playing lots of FPS games. So I can see that they would want someone who has a healthy knowledge of FPS games to help develop their FPS games. That makes sense, wouldn't you agree?
Okay.
Like, okay. This guy's been playing FPS games since, for 16 years, give or take?
Yeah.
So, like, to me, again, if you're going to develop an FPS game, you'd want someone who has good knowledge on FPS games to consult. I think that's a smart business move. Now, this could also just be like, hey, we also found this YouTuber to show our crap as well.
Yeah.
Again, both seem perfectly valid to me as reasons why. But yeah, I'm totally with you, Brett. I'm kind of just... It seems like Ubisoft have managed to like put in like all the worst qualities of gaming in like one big pot, and then just like, hey, let's just throw in free to play and make this game that's like Call of Duty, because we've never had games that are like Call of Duty, and then throw in some NFTs here and there, throw in some live services. It's like the Thanos of collecting all the really crap gaming Infinity gems. It's like NFTs, yes, some free to play, give me some of that. Some open world blandness, give me some of that too. It's like, yeah, so.
And then he seems so surprised when people are like, ugh. Like, they seem unable to understand, like, why are people not playing more Assassin's Creed? It's like, dude, they played 150 hours of the same shit. That's plenty. I don't think they want to buy any more.
I think it's fair to say that they are out of touch, because I can't think of any other term to use apart from out of touch. It's just like, why are you doing this? Like, nobody asked for any of this anywhere. It's like, guys in suits asked for this, and why you listen to those guys? They're useless.
The guys in suits like, hey, I heard about these things called NFTs. Oh, they're talking about them all over the news.
Yeah.
Why are we doing one of those?
There are players who are really interested in NFTs as a hobby in games and the opportunities they afford. Like, what? No, gosh, nobody wants. What was that? They wanted to let people make their own games,
yeah,
or some shit
know.
Like that. They made some backwards fucking comment about how like people want to be able to create the content in the games for free, and then let us profit off of them. Like, yeah, I don't think that's right at all. They're insisting that there's a whole subculture of people who are demanding NFTs in games because it's a great opportunity for gamers. I'm like, yeah, I don't think anybody.
Yeah, like they essentially try to make it like, oh, well, you can generate money in the game for yourself playing the game. You know, like, no, it's not going to be that way. It's going to be you are essentially making money off of all the people that are using this garbage.
Yeah, yeah. It's basically, you want me to make you money and then trust that you're going to give some of it to me. And, you know, yeah. I don't ever, that has never happened. Nobody has ever trusted somebody to give another person money and then gotten money.
Yeah.
That goodwill shit don't work, especially with, you know, big soulless companies.
All right. I kind of just want to go through the last of these quick because I've stopped caring.
You've already sold us or, you know, unsold us. I'm not really sure how you want to put that. But
all right. Apparently, the Prince of Persia's Chance of Time remake is finally going to be coming out. We'll see about that.
Okay.
A new Prince of Persia game, and it will be 2.5D. Okay, interesting. The Crew 3, okay, apparently that's a thing. Okay, whatever. Mario plus Rabbids, another one, I guess.
Okay, yeah,
Roller Champions, I don't know what the fuck that is. Beyond Good and Evil, get the fuck out of here, that's not coming.
They're still mentioning that?
Yeah, they're still mentioning
that. The game hasn't been, like, they were like going hard on it in 2018, but yeah. Like, where's it been?
Yeah, the Splinter Cell remake, we heard about that before. The Division Mobile game, Adam will be happy about that.
And Division some other, Mobile.
Yeah, and a bunch of other mobile games we don't give a fuck about. All right, I don't care about this. I Ubisoft, I think I might be done too.
I mean, I can't say I've bought a Ubisoft game in a long time.
Yeah, all right, let's switch gears. What are we on right now?
Gears of War?
Yeah, it'd be nice. Oh, shit, I didn't update the thing. And we got to talk about Fable 4 because there's problems going on. Okay, so apparently the problems stem from the fact that the studio that's making the game is called Playground Games. They're the Forza Horizon guys. Apparently, yes. They don't know how to make an open world game because they've just made racing games their entire time.
Why would what? You have a?
You asked. Okay, you did ask this when this happened when they announced this. You did ask this, Brett.
I know, but yeah, I know. It's like, why? Why would you give it to that studio? What jackass? When, like, you know who'd make a great open world RPG? That racing game team. We'll put them on. Like, whoever thought that should be taken out back and shot. I don't understand. There had to be a lack of logic making this decision because there is none to be found here.
There's probably a monetary reason. You already know. It was probably cheaper or something. Let me see, what am I reading this from? According to the developer, game designer Juan Fernandez, Playground Games has stumbled over two main issues. One of these issues is what every fan of the series was concerned with when they were revealed as the developer of Reboot, and that's that they have no experience making an open-world, character-driven RPG. Oh, man. They make open-world games, but they're racing sims. This is coming from comicbook.com. You can't get any more different. The other issue has been the studio's frugal approach to the game's development. Interesting. Oh, is it being skimpy or something?
Yeah, they cheap it out.
Oh, wow. Playground Games is very organized and production-driven. Every 2 years, they put out Forza Horizon, which has more than 90 Metacritic. Who gives a fuck? They're good at racing. I'm just paraphrasing. Now, they're good at racing games, but obviously things are not that way when it comes to open world. They wanted to branch out with something different, and they thought that they would do well. That since they did well open world racing games, they do well in open world games. Yeah, because it's the same thing, right? They lack people with the knowledge of how gameplay is done in an open world, how you control a character, and the actions are very different from what you do in a racing game. No shit. At the technology level, you have to develop an animation scripting, a quest system, moving in a car at 300 kilometers, or what, I don't know what the fuck that shit means, has very different requirements than walking through the countryside, which is very true. So yeah, basically, it just stems down to, you know, you put a racing team on an open world game, and, you know, this is what you get.
You know what this reeks of? Management.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was probably a monetary thing. Like, oh, they'll be cheaper if these guys did it.
No, I feel like it's a management thing. I feel like it was like the management said, you know, when it came up, they're like, oh yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
And the rest of the team is like,
can we?
We can't do that.
Yeah, and apparently, Playground Games has the mentality of doing, was it more with less? So it's,
oh, god damn it.
So yeah. Go ahead, Brett. Let it out.
Oh, no, I just I'm making sounds of despair. I'm sorry. Yeah. Don't mind me.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. This game's gonna be a hot mess.
Fuck you guys. Seriously. Like the thing that makes me the most mad about this is the same thing that makes me mad about the fucking what was it the World War Z movie, right? Like it's one thing to make a steaming hot pile of garbage, right? It is another thing to create a dumpster fire in the only place where we can have a nice thing. Like, they're not going to make another new Fable after you burn this shit to the ground. They're just going to be like, well, I guess fans don't want it, and then just walk away. Like, yep. Just do something else. Just scrap it or do something else, being like, yeah, I guess they didn't do it. We're going to put a real studio on it and see what they can do. But no, not only is this thing going to be awful to play, I'm probably not going to play it at all, honestly, but it's going to take the place of something that could have been truly great and made by one of these companies who actually do really good work and world design fuck, even bringing people that you don't know, like not from Ubisoft, and do something slightly different, but Jesus Christ, don't give it to a racing team. Literally anybody but a racing team.
Yeah, and again, you know, we're not saying this team doesn't make good games. They do. They just make good racing games.
Yeah, no, it's not that. It's if you are really good at writing a technical manual for the use of complicated machinery, I'm not going to go up and be like, hey, can you write Game of Thrones next book?
Exactly. It doesn't work like that, you know?
It's like, well, you use words all day. You make sentences and put them into a book. You're clearly qualified. You do all the things that a fantasy novel has. Well, no. Only to somebody who has no idea what a fantasy novel is. And I think that's the problem here, is this reeks of management, like the outside the industry management. Like, I'm sure all of us have worked for, especially all of us who, you know, work in the creative fields, we've all worked for somebody who's never worked for our industry before, but is somehow in charge of us, and they are just the fucking worst. And I've had
management that have literally gone up to the top in animation and don't know what the process is of making animation.
Yeah, yeah, those
but
guys.
But yet they are a producer. So.
Yeah, I'll keep my mouth shut, but I've been in those situations too, Brett. I'll tell you off here. Jesus.
Here's the thing, like here's the one thing, like though, a real man, like if you're gonna have a manager that's like that, or a more, you know, up higher up that's like that, the smart ones have people around them that can literally tell them to their face, like, hey, listen, we can't do that. You know, like we're so used. I'm sure that's. If this is sounding from what this is sounding like, it sounds like maybe an upper management said, hey, yeah, we could do that. And then maybe the under guys are like, no, man, we can't do that shit as much as we would love to. So,
yeah. All right, this game's going to be a mess.
So, one or two things are going to happen. You know, this game is probably not going to be coming out anytime soon.
Yeah.
For them to figure out how to make one of these games. Maybe they should start, you know, maybe we should start opening up.
Maybe Microsoft should just give it to another team, you know?
I don't know.
I think that's what Microsoft should do, because this sounds like a mess.
Yeah.
But, yeah. All right.
They keep having these issues with their franchises. What's wrong with them? Like, literally, like, you had, like, you're talking about Perfect Dark, the latest Perfect Dark game having all these issues, and this game is having issues. I mean, guys, like, I know, Game Pass, but come on, you got to get your shit in check. You got to get your people going in the right direction, because with the exception of the racing game, most of your well-known cornerstone games all slamming into walls. Come on, guys. Come on.
I think they're having a bit of a Netflix conundrum. Like, you know, when Netflix first started making their original content, and it was just clear they were just throwing money at stuff.
Yes.
I think that's where Microsoft is. I think this might just be growing pains. At least that's what I'm hoping. They're just like, sure, can you do it? Can you make a game? Here's some money. Make a game. And now they're coming back, you know, 8 months, you know, 2 years later, being like, so how's that game working? And then utterly horrified by the dumpster fire that they see. It's like, oh, God, what is this abomination? We can't know. We're not paying you money for this anymore. Do something different.
That's disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, it's... God, this is the longest wait fucking ever, because, you know, we're still waiting for that whole, like, how is Microsoft going to handle all these games, game acquisitions and studio acquisitions? Like, we're still waiting to see. And it's this kind of shit that makes it feel like a soap opera. Like, sometimes you're like, man, it looks like they're nailing it. And other times you're like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
So, you do
but really. I think the dam probably breaks with this holiday season.
I guess we'll see. All right. Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
From my point of view, it looks like the main issue with Microsoft is, rather than the studios themselves deciding what games they want to work on, it seems like Microsoft are just assigning titles to studios and saying, okay, you guys will work on this title, you guys will work on that title, without actually saying, okay, like, looking at the expertise of this team, what do they want to do? Like, let them choose what they want to do. And it seems like Microsoft is just not doing that, and hence why you're getting these weird issues where, because teams have been assigned a title, and then they've said, okay, you guys are now making this type of game, people just say, no, this is not what I do, so I'm out. So maybe that's why we're seeing lots of these issues, which is a damn shame, because that's not how you, well, I would assume that's not how you handle these studios. Like, you let them just say, okay, like, what are your strengths, what are your weaknesses, and let's play to your strengths. I mean, it seems to come common sense, but then again, these higher-ups lack common sense, so.
Yeah, that's a shame for the Fable fans, man. Go ahead.
It just seems like a lot of these games are not getting created sort of naturally. It seems like they're just creating factories more than, you know, art exhibits. It's the Halo factory, it's the Gears factory, it's the Forza factory, you know, and it's, you know, their best studios are the ones that have a little bit more of autonomy, you know, like Bethesda, and hopefully Ninja Theory can be like that. But
Activision, we'll see. that studio's already fucking tainted, though, you know.
That's already a Call of Duty factory and stuff, so
yeah.
But you know, with the Coalition and 343 and the Initiative, it's those, you know, other than the Coalition is good. Coalition. The other ones, you know, the Coalition, other ones are still, you know, wait and see. 343 is, I think, for me, it's more on the red. But it's just a shame, man. And, you know, games like, and I'm sorry for people who were looking forward to this, but, you know, games like franchises like Fable and Perfect Dark, like, they're not the franchises that they used to. Like, I don't think anyone was hammering and clawing for these games. And the people who wanted a Fable game wanted a Lionhead Fable game. Yeah, that's you right. know, Lion. You know, for as crazy as Peter Molyneux was with his promises, Fable was his baby. Like, he's the guy that made Fable. Him and Lionhead Studios, and they're not around anymore. And trying to recapture that magic is just, you know, part of what made that game great was a, you know, quirky British kind of type of humor. And I doubt the Initiative is British.
Yeah, but where are those guys from anyway? Well, this is Playground Games, you know.
Oh yeah, Playground Games.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe are they British? Maybe they
Who
do.
Who knows? I mean, maybe they do. I always just assume that if you make a racing game, you're either Japanese or British, you know.
there's a high likelihood. Yep.
All right, man. Let's move on. What are we talking about right now? Oh, Carlos, man, Miss Cleo moment, son.
So
Sony acquires Haven Studios. This is Jade Raymond studio. Carlos called it, man. He was like, hold on, there's something going on back here. I was like, is this on the up and up? You know, when the Haven Studios was announced via the PlayStation blog, you know, I didn't see anything wrong with it. But Carlos was like, hold on, his spider sense went off. And apparently this was the reason they were going to buy him anyway.
It's an independent studio that got announced, and it's, you know, Jade Raymond, who's a pretty big name in this industry, and it was just surprising to me that they would announce it in a PlayStation blog. They didn't have a YouTube channel for it. They didn't have a Twitter post for it. They didn't have their own website for it. I mean, it makes logical sense if you're announcing a new studio that you'd have a website for it. But no, they got announced in the PlayStation blog, and that's what it was.
I assumed whatever their game was going to be was PlayStation exclusive. That's what I'm like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, you know? I assumed they would probably be like what Insomniac used to be. You know, it's like, yeah, we're independent, but we're making games just for you guys. But nope, they're buying a studio outright.
So it looks like, and I think, Tony, for what you mentioned, I think that was the case anyways before. Like, they were still heavily involved. I wouldn't be surprised if Sony had a share of the company as it was being created.
Yeah.
And maybe it was a minority share, and maybe after, you know, a couple of months since it's been announced, I think, you know, Sony just took over the whole thing, and now they're the majority owner, and that's when the announcement happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, though, like, I not to have any faith in what Jade Raymond does, but she has not had, like, a very good success rate on her own. I mean, she's had a lot of the games that she's, been supposedly working on, canceled. I mean, she had her stint with Stadia. She hasn't had the most fairest run, and so they're acquiring a studio that has no track record, which is very interesting to me. And it's not like a Hideo Kojima section where, you know, Kojima has had you know, specific games that he has done. You know, he is the game director, where Jade Raymond was just, you know, bureaucracy for the most of the part. She was, you know, a producer, a promotion, all this other sort of stuff. So it's interesting that they would see this as an effective way to, you know, essentially acquiring the studio. And again, they keep saying that she's working on an open world game or some sort of service game. They've been saying that's the first thing that they said on this original thing. So I'm like, what is, obviously we're seeing that Sony seems to be trying to bolster their services division, right? You know, services game division. But what about Jade Raymond Studios says that they need to own it? It's an interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something that I'm not seeing, you know, or we're not seeing out in the world.
I'm looking at, you know, her career here. So she was a producer on The Sims Online in 2002 and the first Assassin's Creed in 2007. And then from 2009 to she Ubisoft. So she was the executive producer on Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed Bloodlines, Splinter Cell Blacklist, and the first Watch Dogs. Then she was the managing director at Assassin's Creed Unity and Far Cry 4. And the Mighty Quest for Epic Loot. I don't know what the fuck that is. She was an Epic producer. She was a executive producer on that. And then last thing she did was it says SVP group manager for Star Wars Battlefront 2. I don't know what that is.
Okay, so I mean, one thing about it, like,
so she's not a creative either. Then
she's not a creative, but what she could, you know, what is also very important in game development is having a person that's actually good with, you know, with the money and the bureaucracy side of game creation. So maybe the question is, it's, you know, she's known because she was connected with the Assassin's Creed franchise, and she was mostly doing the talking in those situations. But maybe it's a situation where she's got a good eye for personnel.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not worth honestly mentioning her. This is weird thing where people are just like, oh, I worked on this game. I worked on, even in Hollywood, I worked on this movie. Like, bitch, you brought cupcakes, right? Like, you are part of the team, yes, and I'm sure you were a valuable part of the team. I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not diminishing anybody's contribution. What I am saying is that when you put it in that context, you're really kind of making it feel like this person who made decisions on this game is now making decisions on this game, not the person who brought sandwiches for this game is bringing sandwiches, you know.
To be fair, she did more than bring sandwiches.
No, dude. I know. No, I mean, like, an incredibly, like, rudimentary example.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's the one thing about producers in, you know, that all people would say in game development, as opposed to, you know, as to producer roles in other sections, is they actually do produce something. You know, like a producer at a movie is just called producer, but they don't actually produce anything. Apparently, you know, having good management is always a good thing. You know, like, you always hear about David Jaffe, but the producer that he had at Santa Monica Studios, she was like integral in essentially keeping him as a creative person in order. And he said a lot of God of War wouldn't have probably gotten made if it wasn't her for just essentially, you know, putting him in the right position and being like, listen, we got to get this done. So, but again, it's like, it's Jade Raymond's studio, but she's not really a creative mind, is she?
Not like, that I know if she's a producer.
It seems like she doesn't, you know, it seems like she doesn't do a lot of creative roles, but she's often in charge of a bunch of creative people. So that's more like, I feel like this situation is like, she's the most well-known name at the studio, and whatever she's got going on somehow is working. I don't know. Again, it's a weird sort of thing. Like, I don't know what warranted is. Why wouldn't you keep your Japanese studio who'd made time-tested, titles for you, letting all of those guys just walk off by the wayside, but yet Jade Raymond studio, a person who was actually never specifically developed any games herself?
Yeah.
How does that get bought? Like, how does that, you know?
Shareholder. It's a shareholder point of view kind of thing. Again, like, this kind of thing being told to a group of people who are investing in the game or investing in the company, like, that makes you feel good. We have somebody who has directed and managed multiple AAA blockbuster games.
Yeah, like six, yeah, like successful titles. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That is definitely something that you can brag about. The mm-hmm. thing is, it's you're bragging to the wrong people, right? Like the people that you're kind of bragging to, they don't care that this person is going to be efficient and on time producing the things that they say, and that they're going to manage a team well. Mm. You know, that they don't care about that because that is not the thing that they receive. They don't receive happy employees. They receive what those happy employees are supposed to be making, and that requires creative influence too. So, like, this is great on a resume. It's great for investors. It's great for the business side of things. It's definitely a flex there. But when you're pitching a creative product and you're bragging about, you know, you have the best manager ever, like, yeah, I don't really care who my favorite actor is represented by. I don't. They may be a fantastic manager. They may get them, you know, like, I don't even know if I have a favorite actor. Let's go with Ryan Reynolds. I don't care who brings Ryan Reynolds sweater. You could be a manager who does all of it. You get him TiVo and everything on every fucking movie. I don't care. I'm glad he's happy. I care what he does, though.
It's kind of like when a movie studio says from the producer that made Avatar.
Yeah.
You know, it's like from the person who, you know, who made something that you recognize comes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great. Clearly, you can manage a multi-million-dollar production. That's not where my concern lies, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thinking, Brian, you were about to say
something. Yeah, Brian.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, maybe, like, the whole J. Draymond studio acquisition thing was more a case of it's not what you know, it's who you know. So probably some people at Sony were like, hey, like, I know J. Draymond, she's a cool friend of mine, blah, blah, blah. She's making a new studio. We should go buy it. And then put some pressure on some people in suits, and that's why the acquisition was made. Because again, as Manny said, it makes no sense why Sony would be off laying off these Japanese studios that have done all this work for them, only to turn around and purchase this new studio, which has zero track record, because it's a new studio, and all it is people who look good on resumes.
Hey, Brian, do you think it was a negotiation thing? Like, they were trying to hire her, and the negotiations went, like, didn't go well, and she just walked away from the table and, you know, called their bluff. It's like, fine, I'm just going to go start my own studio. And they're like, well, fuck. I mean, come back to this. We'll buy your studio. Just come work for us. Like, they acquired her. That's what they did.
Possibly. Again, like, from the outside in, things always look very, very, like, simple. But as we all can talk about, there's always, like, lots of internal things that we never see. So it's entirely possible that they wanted, like, to bring her on board, but she was like, nah, I don't want to. I'm going to make my own studio, as you said. So, I don't know. It's totally possible.
Yeah, I don't know. This seems like another executive, you know, another, corporate decision, you know? And I got nothing against Jade Raymond, but you're right. It's like the track record. As far as games go on her own, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, like she hasn't had a lot of luck, and she was working with Stadia. She's part of the Stadia deal.
Yeah.
She was part of EA and all of that sort of stuff, too.
She was working with Stadia. She got the Phil Harrison stink.
You know.
Remember,
she was working on a Star Wars game, too, you know.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
Sims Online, Jade Raymond?
Yeah.
Light of Day, and Epic.
It was
Quest,
Amy Henning.
Both of them were, remember? They're working on two different Star Wars games. Sorry about that, Brad. Go ahead.
Oh, Sims Online, never saw the light of day. Epic Quest for Mighty Loot was super hyped. One of the, like, it was a gigantic, I want to say it was crowdfunded or something like that, but, like, there was a ton of hype around it, and then the day it released, it just fell flat on its face, and everybody stopped caring. So I can't say all of these have been exactly home runs.
Yeah. I mean, the only real accomplishment is the Assassin's Creed games. She was on the best ones, you know, the Ezio games,
but,
you know.
But just like I can't really, you know, give her credit for the victory of a creative endeavor, I can't really give her shit for the downfall of it. Like, just as I'm like, you didn't make or break a game, which means you don't make or break a game.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's
so. Yeah, no. Either way, the track record is not there. You know, on her own, because even when Assassin's Creed, she was part of a team. It wasn't her. You know.
Yeah, but I mean,
she didn't officially create the Assassin's Creed franchise. Like, that was what's his face.
What's his face? I know who you're talking about, though.
Yeah, it was that guy.
Yeah,
but, you know.
Honestly, I think.
Patrice Desilets. There it is. That's the name.
Patrice.
Yeah. It came to me.
All of the conversation that we're having, I think, is not relevant to anything that's going to happen with a video game, because I think someone mentioned it earlier. You know, Jade Raymond isn't really like a creative. I think she's more of a, you know, the business side of the thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I definitely think that. I think that just at least looking at her resume, she seems to be a very good. She seems to be a personnel sort of person. So in other words, keeping the creatives in line, making sure things don't, you know, go over budget, stuff like that. So she's on that end. But I don't know if she is. I mean, nowhere in this equation they say it's Jade Raymond Studio, but nowhere in this equation say that she is responsible for the game that they're creating. And you're just hearing, you know, because what's her position at that studio? I don't know, president.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like, you know, if Kojima, like when he made Kojima Productions, we knew what that studio was going to be about.
Exactly.
So I feel like that's more adequate in terms of sort of judging it by track record and. You know, and it's, I think, you know, there's, I don't see any reasons to be excited about the studio or to be negative.
Yeah, no, because, there is nothing. We don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
Because nothing has been shown. All you hear is acquisition and they're working on a service game.
Oh, God.
Yeah, service game.
I notice a lot
buzzwords.
I notice a lot of what Sony's initiative these days seems to be services ideas. When you pick up Bungie and they're talking about a service game from them, you know, these guys, they pick these guys up, there's another service game coming from them.
Well, that's Sony's initiative. I wonder what Microsoft's initiative is doing.
Yeah, no. What's their initiative? Oh, man. Just to have games. It doesn't matter. Who knows?
All right. Well, yeah, go ahead.
They have just to let Manny know, Microsoft has a studio called The Initiative. Yeah. So, you know, and even with them, it's like, who's the head of the initiative? No one knows.
All right, so, man. Yeah, I mean, is it a big studio?
We don't know.
Well, they lost half
their employees. They have a website.
Oh, we're talking about Jade Raymond Studio?
James Raymond.
But we don't know how big the studio we have.
Yeah,
we should find out. So when we ask what Microsoft's initiative, we can be like, I don't know, about 12 people.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. Well,
gotta look up LinkedIn.
Gotta look up something.
I actually had a look on the website, and I think there was like 8 people listed there.
Interesting.
Oh, Raymond Studio?
Or the initiative? Granted, Jade Raymond one. Haven. There you go. That's just the name. Yeah, and there are job positionings. Let's see how many there are.
Crunching a number.
Doing research.
Yo, you're researching?
Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 11 job openings at the moment.
Okay.
And at the terms of people, dear God, there's...
The people.
Exactly. There's about 12 people. Listed on the website, so take that as you will.
Interesting. We'll see.
Yo, yeah. Can I bring up a sidetrack? Just super random. I just want to get it out of my system.
Yeah.
We're trying to keep the show tight, man.
Yeah. It's going easy to go to bed.
You know, motherfuckers talking about this shit.
I love when it rains in New York.
Oh, why? Oh, really? Oh, okay. Because, the shimmering lights and shit.
Well, not only that, but you don't have those crazies walking around, you know, outside, you know, walking, talking, fighting, and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that is true. Kind of keeps them calm.
The crazies.
Okay, I got a question.
Oh.
It's gonna sound like an asshole question, but I genuinely am curious. Does New York smell better or worse when it rains?
Okay, the instant it starts raining, it smells way worse, right? And then it just dissipates. And then afterwards, it smells like crap, like horrible crap. After it stops raining. It
smells like rain.
So when it's actually raining, you don't smell nothing because it's raining, right? But before, or initially, and then afterwards, it smells like absolute shit. If you're in the city, obviously. If you're, you know, in Queens, you're fine. But yeah, in the city, it's terrible.
P-Town.
Yeah, P-Town. Yeah, oh, God. At least it washes that away. By the way, Manny, when I was taking elevators when I was 71st, dude pissing right there, you know. It's like, come on man, it's fucking insane. Me and the woman trying to get on the elevator, we're like, just try to stay away from this motherfucker, you know. Pants were all brown, like, oh my God, it's crazy. All right, man, let's move on. Segway kings. Segway kings, speaking about nasty shit.
Uh-oh.
We got to talk about these Sonic 2 controllers, man. Fuck.
Oh, now we got to show those things.
Yeah.
They're real?
Oh, God.
Yeah, they're real. Yeah. Okay. So everybody has seen these controllers. So basically, Microsoft is releasing these hairy Sonic controllers. I'm not making this up. Controllers with hair on them. Fur. This is absolutely insane. Like, do you know how nasty this shit's going to be? Like, because I tweet about it. I'm like, there's going to be crumbs and all this other stuff. But just think about it. Let's just say you try to be clean. Bro, all that fur, you're going to get sweat and then your oils and ugh.
Like, all the gunk, the Doritos and Mountain Dew is going to get on it.
It's like, can you shave it? Like,
I wonder if it's just the glove that goes over it. Like, you know, I don't know. And then Microsoft, man, with their exclusive controllers, man, they got controllers for days.
Yeah, no, they got more controllers than games, you know? But look at this shit. Like, who fucking, that's disgusting.
Yo, man, I'd be down for a terry cloth slipcover on my controllers.
Yeah. The console looks cool, though. I will admit that.
Is it furry?
No, the console's not furry. Imagine that. It'll fucking overheat. But, like, you know how this looks like a Series S, it looks like here.
Yeah, it's a Series S, and it's got Knuckles and Sonic on there.
But the cool thing is the circle. It's a ring, you know?
Yeah, like, you know the circle where the giant vent is on the center of it? At the right side of it? That is like it has a ring around it, like a gold ring.
Yeah. So right now, this thing's an exclusive. You can't just buy it at a store. It's a giveaway. Okay. But yeah, it's like, dude, like, again, I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, this is going to be crumbs and all this other shit.
Hey,
you know, there's going to be some crusty controllers, if you know what I mean. You know, it's like, ugh.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a gimmick.
It is a gimmick. See, the thing, I can understand buying this shit, but not actually playing with it, just, you know, keeping it somewhere. It's like, hey, look, I bought one of these controllers.
But, yeah, man, I got this hairy console. I got these hairy controllers.
You know what it looks like? What's the name of that that cartoon character from, like, Warner Brothers? Like, he just looked like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, the monster. I think, yeah, the
like, greenish one kind of dude.
No, he was red. He's red, yeah.
It's the red monster.
And he had sneakers for some reason.
Yeah, he had sneakers.
Yeah, he looked like a hairy Hedorah, you know, the Godzilla the smog monster. Just like, imagine that just with hair. That's what that thing reminded me. Because he had these big googly eyes, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Did you ever see the one where they shaved him?
Oh, no, I did not.
Yeah, they shaved him.
That was some nihilistic shit right there. They shaved him, and all that was left was shoes.
Wow.
Yeah, because he was just all hair.
What's the name of that guy?
I can't remember. I always remember just being known as the monster.
Let me see. Look,
he actually has a name.
Oh, Gossamer. That's his name, Gossamer.
Oh, there we go. Gossamer. Yeah, that is his name. So you're saying that controller looks like Gossamer.
It looks like Gossamer to me. Yeah, that's what it looks like to me. That's interesting.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, the red one.
Here's the thing I don't get. Like, why did they put hair on it when, like, nobody in the Sonic universe really has fur? They just kind of, like, weird anime spike hair. Like, nothing looks like that controller looks like.
Well, in the movies, they have fur. That's why.
I mean, kind of, yeah, like, they're kind of spiky. Not Muppet fur like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is Muppet fur.
Yeah, you're right about that. I just don't see it as functional, man.
I mean,
if they came off and washed, man, I would fucking, like, you've never been white knuckling a game and your hands are all fucking.
That's what I'm saying.
Like,
you gotta get oils and shit all over.
Yeah, but if you could take
it
off and wash that shit, that's what I'm like, man. You give me a terry cloth slip cover, I'd be down for that shit.
Oh, man.
Especially playing fucking Souls games, man. Palms get sweaty and shit when you're fighting a boss.
Yeah, man. So yeah, we had to talk about this already. That's just funny to me. You know. Yeah. Right. All right, man. I think we're done here. What's up? Anything else?
We're not talking about that Sega. You probably don't need to talk. It's already old news.
Wait, what happened?
Sega closing down.
We talked about that on Throwdown like months ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we already talked about that.
All right.
Okay. So yeah, Manny, anything to plug?
As of now, just waiting for the go ahead to actually talk about it. But there's a couple of things that are in the pipeline, and they're really cool things. So yeah, stay tuned.
Good stuff, man. Hey, you know, stay tuned to I Am Negan. It's on Spotify. Go ahead, Carl.
You can catch I Am Negan on Spotify, iTunes, and thecoalition.com, the Coalition on YouTube, and yeah, we talk all things Mothership, and good thing the world beyond is gone. And you know, it's me, Adam Vale, your host, Richard Bailey Jr., and Carlos Romero, and yeah, I Am Negan. Stay tuned.
We got the nuke.
We got the nuke.
Oh, man. All right, man. You already know what throw down. Follow us on Twitch and Twitter. Head over to Discord where Mob Hits is always dropping the crazy rumors and where we get all of our news stories. So thank you for that, keeping us informed, especially now. Me and Carl's like, yo, what happened this week? We had to look at Discord, you know?
What happened?
So yeah, every single story that we talked about was on Discord. So thank you guys. You guys keep this show going, you know? It's all collaboration around here. You know, good stuff. Like I'm Negan, we're also on every podcast app. We are Throwdown Show. Two words, Throwdown Show. Throwdownshow.com to listen to previous episodes through your ear holes. It's the audio versions, obviously. And if you have been on YouTube or are on YouTube, I should say, and enjoy the content, make sure you hit like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to be notified. We will never tell you to smash the like button beforehand. You got to watch the show. You know, then we'll tell you. But if you liked it, you know, cool. If not, leave a thumbs down. That helps too. You know,
engagement.
Yeah, that's what they care about. They just care about engagement. Anyway, links to everything down below. Once again, I was your host, Tony Polanco, and tonight was joined by Emilio Lopez.
See you next time,
Carlos Romero.
Peace out,
Brett Murdoch.
Deuces,
and Brian Majoma.
Shout out to B Will. He now has two of them to deal with.
You're right.
All right, man. See y'all later. Peace out.
This is latest.